Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and today's show is titled Stress. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. You can also listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. We encourage and welcome your questions. We're all familiar with stress, and most people would say they don't like it, even when we recognize that it's part of our defense system. In fact, most of us make at least some conscious effort to reduce the stress in our life. But few of us can understand what stress is, let alone deal with it. If we can understand stress a little better, then maybe we can deal with it more effectively. Our guest today is Dr. Mary Wingo. She has spent her life studying stress. She wrote The Impact of Human Stress Response, The Biological Origins and Solutions to Human Stress, which culminated from 20 years of research and social insight and provides a unique fusion of science, economics, and sociology. Dr. Wingo was born in the United States, where she earned a PhD in human stress research from the University of North Texas. In 2014, she immigrated to Ecuador. In her book, she presents effective science-based stress management solutions that any person in any community can employ. Dr. Mary Wingo. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Well, thank you so much for the wonderful intro, David.
Well, thanks for being here. Tell me, before we get started, why'd you move to Ecuador?
Well, exactly for the same reason of the topic that we will be discussing, I found that my native home, for me personally, was just not conducive for a low stress lifestyle. And sure enough, it is completely different down here. And I've learned the Ecuadorians have taught me a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine. My daughter was on a mission down there 20-some years ago, and she was down by the beaches helping some of the poor communities, develop whatever facilities they were going to do. It was one of the, it was when she was getting her master's degree. She was down there for a summer, and she loved it down there.
She's
a
beautiful
place. Well, I want to talk about four broad aspects of stress with you today.
Okay.
Number one, the nature of stress, and then the cause of stress, and three, the ways to deal with stress, and finally, four, the cost of not dealing with stress. So let's start out by trying to understand the nature of stress. Tell me, what is stress?
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you what stress is. And first of all, the man who actually coined the term stress is Hans Selye, and he's actually a father of medicine, and he coined the term stress around, 1930s, 1940s, 75, 80 years ago. And he struggled all of his life. He's a physiologist, just like I am. He struggled all of his life trying to pin down a definition. And you could see it in all of his writings. And he would go around in circles and circles and circles. And he knew what it is, and he could see it in his patients. But he could not put a really good definition together. So after many years of looking at this myself, I was able to come up, pin down an actual definition. And the definition of stress is this. The definition of stress is the rate of adjustment, okay, you have to go through as a human being in order to adapt to whatever environment you happen to find yourself in at the time. Okay, so we have two components here. We actually have, organism, and then we also have the environment. So it's a two-pronged concept. So there's a lot of things that we can do about stress on a personal level. There's a lot of agency that we have, a lot of power that we have. But you know, if you're in the middle of, you know, say Fukushima, and your DNA is being blasted apart, you know, doing mindfulness meditation may be of limited use. So I really wanted, no, and you know, and this is where a lot of people get confused, because you know, we have this explosion of health, you know, of health related, you know, stress, illness, and early death. I mean, it is literally exploding right now in the modernized world, especially in the United States. And after 20 years, I mean, I've always been interested in this. And even though I left science 10 years ago, I've always kept up with this. And I realized at this point in time, David, that no other scientists, so there's plenty of scientists, there's plenty of academic papers, there's probably well over 100,000 in the last 30, 40 years, but there's been nobody who has come and put this together. This is a very complex topic, and put it together in a way that people can understand and employ. There's been tons of research and tons of academics and tons of experts that have like, okay, well, we need to do something about this. This is really affecting our society, but no one's really put, like, seeing the forest for the trees. And this is what my work has attempted to do.
Okay. Now, you know, you're saying it's stress is the rate of adjustment or adaption to our environment. Well,
yes.
You know, we're continually adapting to
Correct.
Our environment. So clearly, it's when we have too much change happening too quickly
Right.
that the stress occurs, right? And so
Yes.
It's a
Yes.
level that we reach, and all of a sudden, we get this.
Yeah, correct. And notice I didn't say bad stuff. You know, it's literally, it's like, you know, your physiological transmission. You know, it's sort of like the transmission in your car. You know, are you going to operate at first gear, second gear? How hard are you going to spin those wheels? And this isn't necessarily bad stuff. It's not necessarily, you know, your boss yelling at you. It's literally how much work you're expending in order to adapt to your present environment. And so this can be good stuff. This can be bad.
Well, what are the good stuff? Tell me about the good stuff.
Well,
you know,
okay.
We think of stress as fairly miserable. Well, tell me why it's not, you know, what aspects aren't bad?
Okay, winning the lottery. Winning the lottery, for instance, this is a very interesting phenomenon, has shown to create a lot of stress in people's lives, because they were, you know, accustomed to a standard of living, and then all of a sudden, bam, the media, their family, you know, everybody is after them, their life is totally changed, you know, they have to, you know, just completely reconfigure their lives. And a lot of times, for many people, this turns out to be a negative thing. And then, of course, you've got getting married, graduating. I mean, all the great, you know, points, you know.
Vacation. You know, we take a vacation. We try to take a vacation and go off to go relax somewhere. We never do. We come back more stressed than when we started.
Yeah. Change. I mean, exactly. You know, you go off to Europe for 2 weeks, and, you know, you go, you know, slamming through 3-4 countries. You want to see everything, and you're exhausted when you get back. And what it is that, you know, folks just don't understand, because no one has ever explained this to clearly, that the harder you run, the harder, the quicker you're going to burn both your candle at both ends.
Wow. Okay. Well, how about the negative aspects? What you know, we all are a little frustrated by it, but I suspect some of these negative aspects are pretty serious. Give me a list of some of the major contributors to stress.
Okay.
The bad stuff.
Okay. Well, what causes stress in modernized society and in our in our society is five major things, and this, you know, these aspects are probably five separate shows if we really wanted to get into these. But first is just simple complexity. I mean, how we think, we're trying to do too much, multitasking, constantly messing with our electronic gadgets instead of like just sitting there and being calm and concentrating on one thing at a time. When we pile just too many things at one time, when we're trying to do too much stuff at one time, that has been shown in science to be a very destructive habit that causes actually a lot of health related problems as well as cognitive problems. So that's number one. Number two is social inequality. And so when we're living in societies that are very unequal and very unjust, and this is World Health Organization. I mean, this is a very well studied phenomenon, especially in men. You're looking at a lot of early deaths and a lot of unnecessary, preventable, and expensive illness being caused by that. Closely related, and probably is a major factor in the U.S. is loss of social capital, loss of social support. This is something that has basically cratered for us as a society since the Industrial Revolution. And then
go over that again. Social capital. You don't think of the word social and capital in the same in the same sentence. That's when you lose your support system. That's when like your family or your or things mm-hmm. like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. We're talking about whether it's family, social support, friends. For some people, church. Yeah. Okay. The way our society is structured, a lot of families have separated due to jobs or having to go attend school in another state. The way our society and economic system is structured, it is not conducive for families staying in one place. You lose your job, you have to sell your house, you have to move to another state, another city. You're in the military, you've got a family, you're constantly being stationed in different areas. And so, your kids get torn out from their social networks, from their school, their friends, and you see that other societies, and for the most of human history, we stayed normally in one place. But we're at peak immigration all over the world, but especially the U.S. It's not as common as it was to just stay in your hometown. Go to school, get a job. The people are forced tear up roots, and this is extremely destructive. Number four, now this is a little bit different. We're kind of talking about psychological, social issues. Number four is a very strong chemical stressor, very, very potent chemical stressor, and that is the derangement or depletion of the human biome, which is the normally friendly microorganisms that you carry in your gut, your skin, and basically all of your orifices. And the reason why, you've probably heard a lot about this, the derangement or depletion of the system is very important, is that, it, believe it or not, it's a functional extension of your organ systems. So, like, if you have been taking many, many antibiotics during your life, you eat a lot of processed food, this has all been shown to really screw up the populations of friendly microorganisms that you have on and within your body. And with that comes disruption of endocrine system, of immune system, of production of various factors like vitamins. All this is very much an extension of your organ systems. And so basically it's like you're cutting off your foot despite your face when this happens. And this is a very potent chemical stressor. And then number five It's just chemical stressors in general. Chemical stressors, again, associated with, use of antibiotics, various chemicals that we have in our homes, we have at our jobs, that we're around, radiation. This type of stressor, these type of stressors, again, they weren't present, a lot of them, even 50 years ago. And so to say that we can adapt in 20, 30, 40 years to these novel compounds and substances, that's just, we don't have it. So we have to be very careful what we expose ourselves to.
Yeah, exactly.
What it is another half of this is the involuntary exposure to chemical stress, which is pollution.
Yeah, right.
The various aspects of pollution, which are thought to result in 40% of all deaths every year. So,
really?
Yeah.
40%?
Yes.
I mean, worldwide.
Yes. Yeah, worldwide. Contamination of soil, air, and water.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
I wouldn't have thought that.
I did not know this either until I read it.
Yeah, okay. Now, you say that there are, for a stress, there's three different phases of a stress, and I kind of like this. Why don't you explain what these three different phases are?
Okay, and this is what I think might, help people sort of understand, a little bit of the nuts and bolts. And this was, this is the general adaptation syndrome, and this was coined by the father of modern medicine and stress, Hans Selye, around 70, 80 years ago. And this is a phenomenon he saw in both animals and humans when they were attempting to adapt to whether it was an illness or, various, types of events in life. And, okay, so the first part is adaptation, okay? And so the organism, or we'll just talk people, the person is confronted with the need to adapt, okay? So, for instance...
So they get an alarm.
You see the bear's chasing you, or you're driving and a little kid, runs in front of your car, and everyone knows that feeling of, I get this feeling. And right. What follows is a little bit of disorientation. You're like, oh, okay, things aren't what they were 2 seconds ago, and so we need to be vigilant. What is going on here? What is going on? But during the process of the beginning, adaptation, this first part's adaptation, you kind of lose your balance a little, but then all of a sudden your adrenaline response, and this is very complicated, but I'm gonna talk simply about it, pops in within a couple seconds, and then you start becoming focused. Okay, so that is the beginning part of the stress response.
Okay, that's phase one.
Right. Okay. And so you enter them, and the second part could last from minutes to days to months to possibly years. Okay, this is the resistance. Okay, so what happens then is, the situation has changed in life. Maybe your spouse has died, and literally everything has changed. Your financial situation's changed. The way, you go to bed every night, you eat meals with this person, all that has changed. Okay, so what you're having to do is you're having to reconfigure a new type of equilibrium for yourself. It's homeostasis. That's the fancy word for it. But it's a new type of equilibrium. And this can happen cognitively, emotionally, or physically. Like, for instance, I'll give you an example. A big problem I know a lot of foreigners have here in the Andes is altitude. And so, okay, you come to the Andes, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I don't feel very good. this is horrible. But after a period of time, if you're taking care of yourself, you develop the resistance to the thinner oxygen. Okay, so that's a physical example.
Right.
I just named like an emotional example. Say you lose your spouse. Oh, I'm going to have to adapt. I'm going to have to rearrange my life to this new reality. Well, it's exactly the same thing. Your body doesn't know the difference, whether it's in your mind or actual like chemical processes in your body. The result is exactly the same. The chemical mechanisms of adaptation kick in, and whether they affect your brain or various metabolic processes in your organ system, it is all the same. So that is resistance. And that is, imagine, you know, if the stress doesn't go away, okay, if it does not resolve, okay, if you cannot reach a peaceful equilibrium physically, cognitively, emotionally, okay, then we become at risk of this third part, which is exhaustion, okay? And everyone knows what it's like to feel exhausted emotionally and cognitively. If you're cognitively exhausted, okay, if you're for instance, you know, you're in medical school and, you know, you've been on duty, for 24 hours straight. Of course, studies have shown this is a very dangerous practice.
Right.
And that, you know, your ability to solve problems, your frontal lobe starts to go offline. Your ability to solve problems is compromised. If it's physical, then you're, basically your body's ability to function is compromised. Like for instance, if you are diabetic, and you know, diabetes doesn't happen overnight. This takes decades of culmination. Well, you know, you've had your resistance phase where you've had many years of high blood sugar and, you know, you really haven't had to pay for it. You know, your body's compensated. Well, finally, it's hit the wall and you start getting tissue destruction or you start getting cognitive, problems. You can't solve problems or emotional problems. You can't, you know, you put up with it, and finally you're going to get to where you get emotional dysregulation. You know, you just can't take it anymore. Well, anyway, this is all part of exhaustion. And if we're talking on the physical level, we're talking tissue damage. We're talking tissue damage, and if it's widespread enough, the inability to function, disability, and if it keeps on going, death. Okay, so you can
really do it in. Okay, so those are the three.
Yeah.
Three different phases of it. We're talking to Dr. Mary Wingo here on stress. Now, so what you have said here is that. You've mentioned three types of stress: psychological, chemical, and physical.
Yes.
Yeah. And then what you haven't said is that you say in the book, you know, that we have a response. Our response to stress can be either rigid or plastic. What's that all about?
Okay. Yeah. Our response. Okay. So where a lot of people get into trouble with stress, and you know, this causes problems. This causes, you know, high blood pressure, other sorts of diseases later on. Is how we approach adaptation. We can you know approach it one of two ways. We can try to resist it. Okay. So we have two options when we approach stress. We can assess the problem. Is this something that I need to change myself in order to adapt? Okay, if it's something like, you know, going to keto here in Ecuador, yeah, okay, I need to change myself in order to adapt to the thinner oxygen, definitely. I can't pay anybody else to do it. I can't manipulate the world to do it for me. I have to change myself, my own body, so I can adapt, you know, to very high altitudes, for instance. Or is it something that we can manipulate the environment, we can change the environment, we can alter, we can use our problem-solving abilities of our frontal lobe to change the environment? Well, if the environment's too cold, we can build a house, we can create a fire. This is all artificial constructs that we have created because of our gargantuan frontal lobe. We can see into the future, we can engineer solutions. I mean, this is part of what civilization's all about. So a big key to successfully managing stress is to be able to realistically delineate what your options are in both. I mean, when you're looking at a stressor, can you afford to be rigid? I mean, can you change the environment? Or are you sort of subject to the environment and you just kind of need to let it go and, do what you need to do right in order to get from A to B?
Yeah. Okay. Now, one of the things you mentioned in the book is when it came to causes of stress, you said that the number one cause of stress is our society, and it's the breakdown of human relationships.
Yes.
Yeah. That's interesting that you would say that that's the number one cause.
Yes. Yes. That's a science has shown us, and these are some heavy hitters. In science, I mean, there's so many of them. God, there's so many brilliant thinkers in science research of all different disciplines. But yeah, it's basically we're meant to be social creatures. I mean, we have to be. We're born helpless. I mean, you know this. We're born helpless. We're absolutely helpless. We're the most helpless species.
Right. It's interesting if you think back and you wonder how did humankind ever get started, seeing that we, that the baby starts out so utterly helpless.
And it takes so many resources to get to where you're even, halfway independent from mom and dad.
Exactly.
It takes many years. And so as a result, we have a built-in mechanism that we, a social mechanism. Even the most introverted and asocial of us humans, do have some sort of need for contact with other humans, especially humans, or at very minimum, very minimum pets.
Yeah.
But we have some, and so the most potent stress, the stressor that's caused the most problems in human history are breakdown in human relations. It's caused all wars, all breakups of all societies, breakdowns of all societies, breakup of nation states. It's a problem, usually with egos, and ultimately what that results in is lack of empathy. So we should not underestimate in our personal lives how, the importance of empathy. And again, we've lost that a lot in the U.S. And we've, taken a hard-nosed approach to a lot of things in our culture. And we've lost kind of a basic art of empathy in many, many cases. And this is very destructive, Dave.
Yeah, I could believe it. When your book started out, in the beginning of the book, you had eight different ways to deal with stress. You had an eight-step process, I should say.
Yes.
And you've covered number one, right? Because the first thing you got to do is recognize the sources. And you talked about the complexity and the inequality of society, and such. Why don't you start at number two, if you want me to help you with the list, I'd be happy to, because I have it right here.
Oh, yeah, and I've got it here, too. Well, basically, ultimately, we can combine the steps together to kind of make it a little bit faster. Basically, what I wanted is a very easy book for people, people of differing educational, cultural backgrounds, religious backgrounds, to be able to very clearly, look at these five different causes that we just went over a few minutes ago, and be able to very clearly, with, just using pen and paper, say, okay, in my life, I mess with my smartphone way too much. I'm way too distracted. I try to do. And what we want is we want people to be able to look at these categories and just be able to itemize, use these as pause for reflection and to itemize every single stressor in their day, in their week, in their month, in their life of what, what they undergo every day and what they have to contend with. And what the surprising thing is that it's probably a list of hundreds. Okay, so there's probably, and so what we're looking at is just people to be aware. I mean, so this is just a little bit of an easy, easily formatted function.
But there's probably a small number that really caused most of the stress.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The 80-20 rule. Yeah. But the key is, it's just to simply put it down on paper, okay? And then do the same thing if you've got sort of a troubled family, which there's, oh boy, I tell you what, families are under tremendous stress. When I look at the families here in Ecuador and compare them to the families in the U.S., there's not even a comparison. Families in U.S. are in really bad, big trouble. Right. And so if you've got a family, if your family's interested in trying to repair things, going over possibly with the help, you don't necessarily need a psychologist or a therapist, but it could probably, if you have one, it'd probably help with family counseling, going over, these five different categories. Yeah. And then just simply repeating the step. If you live in a community, which a lot of us do, which is under a lot of stress, like say for instance, I lived in West Texas and we had a lot of fracking and the water was polluted with arsenic and God knows what else. But for instance, okay, so that is community stress. That was a big deal in our community. And this is where activism and troublemaking can become very useful because, people really need to understand that, hey, I mean, if 40% of people are dying from chemical stress in the world every year, due to pollution, this is causing, me, immune problems so this is costing the community, billions of dollars a year, it's costing, maybe, erasing 10 years, off, average person's life in this particular community. Whatever is going on, the demographics can easily be studied. And so this is where activism, or say maybe, hint, you've got an unjust political system. This is again where very unjust, unequal, unfair societies can really, really, especially for men, cause tremendous damage.
Yeah. Okay.
Tremendous cost.
Okay. All right. So then you had some rules in here that you were looking at. To remember things like the fact that stress comes from adaptation to the environment and the body when body becomes fatigued, you can get yourself very highly stressed or not be able to deal with them. And then one of the things that I liked was where you said create a balance between stimulation and routine.
Yes.
I think that's something that we overlook, the value of routine and how that needs to be a good chunk of our life, and then the stimulation, you need some of that too.
Well, now this is where I'm going to geek out a little bit, but I'm not going to go over anybody's head. But see, this is where the hardcore, science, this is where I've spent a lot of my time, because there were so many mysteries when it comes to adaptation for organisms in general, but we look at humans because they're the most interesting, because that's what we are, that's who we are. I realized that there's two aspects of reality that we as organisms deal with. We have our repetitive, our cyclical, our routine aspects of reality. And then, of course, then we have the adaptation. We have the so-called stress. What we consider novel surprises. Nobody's life has exactly gone as planned. The best laid plans usually always change because life is unpredictable ultimately. I would have never guessed I would have been living here in Ecuador. But then again, we come across, we're living our routine, and then we come across these deviations from the norm. And believe it or not, we've got entire nervous hormonal an endocrine system immune systems, that are adapted to these states of reality. Okay, so for instance, we have our what's called the parasympathetic nervous response and all the cascading responses that come from that. And that is called the rest and digest. That covers the aspects of routine for us as organisms. While the sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight, covers the novel aspects when functioning properly. And these are mechanisms. These mechanisms are susceptible to disease or malfunction or abuse and overuse, and they can malfunction. And when that happens, that's when a disease, any disease, all diseases that we know of in the universe start. They start from a derangement of these processes.
Okay. Now you said, and you said a minute ago, but you made a big point in the book, which I thought was good, that there's a huge cost of stress.
Yes.
And we overlook it. You mentioned a lot of the diseases that we all know. Why don't you talk a little bit about those that. Things like cancer and such like that, how that is costing society a lot. And you don't think of it as coming from stress, but, why don't you talk about that?
Well, let me tell you, first off, let me just expand a little bit of what I just said a minute ago, because I know that this ultimately is going to cause a lot of controversy. Every disease that we know of as humans is caused originally from a derangement. Okay, of our systems that control our novel aspects and our routine aspects. Okay, of our physiology. Okay, and so basically we enter that phase of exhaustion that we just talked about a second ago.
Yep.
And every single disease, you don't get disease when you're in equilibrium, when you're in homeostasis. You get disease when you start falling out of homeostasis. I mean, every single disease. So, like, for instance, cancer, we've always had cancer throughout, millennia, but it's exploded in the last, 100 years or even less, 50 years. Same with heart disease, same with pulmonary disease, same with a metabolic disease such as diabetes, which leads to other, heart disease. I mean, it's just kind of a circular. They weren't as nearly as prevalent as they are today.
And now, are they equally prevalent in, say, Ecuador?
It's a lot. Well, I tell you what, you do have a lot of modernization here. I mean, you do have. I mean, like the city I live in, it's got four universities. I mean, it's just like any city in Europe. I mean, I noticed this. The people that are professional, I mean, the doctors, the lawyers, professors, the people that have the westernized lifestyle have the westernized illnesses.
Okay.
Especially the mental illnesses. I mean, they're the ones. See, Prozac, use of Prozac, use of Zoloft, use of Xanax, et cetera, it's a lot less here. I mean, yeah, you still have some. But it is like a tiny fraction of what we have in the U.S. And the children, hardly any child is medicated with, Adderall. I mean, it's like a foreign language. Like, medicate your children? I mean, you just don't have the problems with childhood depression and attention deficits that we have. It just doesn't exist. It's a curiosity. They're like, why, But then the folks, and these are folks I really, really respect, the folks that are like in more of the old school way of doing things, and I just love them. The folks from, the proletariat, the folks that run the farmers markets, that grow our food. I mean, it's basically mostly organic. I mean, you don't have giant tractors, this is by hand or just by very, very simple machinery. So it's a really cool old school alongside this ultra modern aspect. It's really cool.
Wow.
But I find that those people, they don't have the the problems that the folks that live in the more modernized way of life have. They just don't have it. It's just, they're a lot happier. I mean, they're a lot, they just don't have. In fact, medicine is socialized here for the most part. I mean, you do have options for fancy private care. But, you know, you go to, like, these clinics here, and they're almost always empty. I mean, these are, like, it costs minimal or nothing. And you would think in the U.S. they would be jam-packed. But it's like, you know, you don't even have to wait 5 minutes. You just go in and, they take your ID, sign you up, and, you know, you're right in to see the doctor. You don't even have to wait. There's, like, no waiting. And that's another really weird thing. Like, you're just used to packed, crowded clinics, you know, where you're waiting 2 hours just to see, you know, a general practitioner or a nurse, you know, a nurse practitioner. And that just doesn't exist here. You just don't have the huge demand on the health services like we do in modern society.
Yeah. So part of this this cost, certainly child abuse probably is a big a big cause from stress. People can't deal with their life, so they take it out on the kid when they get home.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not just that. It's really, really complex. Alan Fratelli has had this, it's so fascinating. It's adverse childhood experiences study going on for, I don't know, several decades. And he studied, many hundreds of thousands of people. And it's basically a 10-question survey that asked, like, were you, say, exposed to, violence in the home? Were, you know, your parents mentally ill? Were you, were your parents, were you exposed to divorce? I mean, it's real easy yes-no questions. And what he's found is this dose-related response, okay? So the higher proportion, when you're getting, where you're answering, like, say, 4 or 5 questions of these questions affirmative, then there is just this dose-dependent response later in life of almost every, like, disease known to man. I mean, like, your odds of getting sick from anything, for becoming diabetic, having pulmonary dysfunction, having heart disease, you know, having communicable diseases of all sorts, just skyrocket. I mean, it's just step by step. It's a direct one-to-one correlation almost.
Yeah, I guess addictions are the same thing.
I mean, everything. I mean, from, you know, psychosis. I mean, you're, you know, everything. It's very fascinating. And so looking at that there, just for the U.S., we're not talking any other country. We're looking at $500 billion lost just for that. We're talking workplace stress. I mean, everybody knows how bad it sucks to work for an awful place. Well, it's not only sucky, not only does it just explode healthcare costs, but it's also very unprofitable. You know, so even if you don't care for the human condition, if you're just a bean counter, you need to be looking at this. This is costing your company a tremendous amount of money. Mental illness, just mental illness alone worldwide right now is costing $2.5 trillion. And it's like in 15 years, this number is expected to go to like $6-8 trillion.
So how about terrorism? What type of effect do you think stress has on terrorism?
Oh, this is a very, and mind you, again, you know, empathy is a very, very, very good tool to use when looking at this. Terrorism, and Chris Hedges actually wrote a lot about this. He's a very, very famous political commentator, and who has been through a lot, who's actually covered many revolutions, in modern history. So he spoke about this. A lot of causes of so-called terrorism are due to, you know, usually high unemployment. Again, you know, we've got, high inequality, you know, so we got a lot of unemployment, a lot of economic distress, and then we've got stress on social systems, so we've got, you know, stress on social capital. And what happens, especially when you get too many young men that don't have the ability, they don't have the jobs, they've got too much time on their hands, and they don't have a future. Okay? In any society, we can't blame this on the Muslims. This can happen. This happens in our society, you know, disenfranchised young men. When you get them together, okay, this kind of stuff always happens. They always fall for a demagogue. Okay, hint, hint. Always fall for a demagogue. And these kind of things happen, you know, when people are disenfranchised. So when a society is under stress, like clockwork, it doesn't matter, you know, the nationality, it doesn't matter the race, the religious background. This is what happens. Men, young men get frustrated and things happen. They fall under the spell of a demagogue promising, a false prophet promising solutions, and then stupid things happen.
So if you were if you wanted to reduce, which obviously you do, but say you had the power to reduce stress in the United States and, you know, and other highly industrialized countries, where would you start? What would you do?
Okay. Number one, we need to work on making these societies more equal. Because, I mean, that's just flat out, I mean, you know, just number one. I believe it's increasing the Gini coefficient. I believe that's increasing the Gini coefficient. Or I can't remember if it's a higher or lesser, but it's making the Gini coefficient more equal.
So how do you do that? Jobs, a better education?
Yes. Yeah. What you do, and again, this gets in the social aspect, and this is why it took so long for me personally to synthesize all this, because I'm coming from a science background, and I'm looking at the social, economic, political application, and, you know, this isn't, I mean, I'm having to kind of expand my boundaries, but basically, what you want to do is you don't want to make people desperate. Like, you don't want people to be afraid that they're going to become homeless, that they're going to starve, that their families are going to starve. You just, when you have that kind of situation where people are like, you know, they just can't go to work and earn just a very basic minimal living, they're worried, then is going to cause social unrest.
Because they're in the exhaustion phase of your response.
Yeah, you're having to be more plastic. Again, we haven't covered the science of this, but basically you're having to be constantly more plastic to the environment. You're more vulnerable to the environment. I mean, for instance, you know, if it's really cold and you can't afford gas or heating for your home, you're vulnerable to the cold. And so you're having to spend a lot of metabolic resources, you know, not, you know, thinking about you know, Shakespeare, you know, and you know, higher levels of thought. You're thinking like, well, it's, you know, 20 degrees outside and my house is like 37 degrees and I've got ice on the inside. I need to worry about not freezing to death tonight. You know, I don't need to worry about my child's homework. You know what I'm saying? I mean, when you're getting in the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, when those get jeopardized, that's when problems start to occur.
Okay. We've pretty much run out of time here, unfortunately.
It's fun, very fun.
What are you doing these days? You know, tell people about your book and anything you're doing that they might be interested or want to interface with what you're doing.
Well, ultimately, I really was reluctant to write the book because I knew it was gonna raise a bunch of hell ultimately, because it's basically a book on activism. I mean, yeah, it's a science. I mean, it's definitely a science book. It's a social book. There's a little bit of psychology in there. And of course, it covers a lot of the financial costs as well. But I wanted it to be a book on activism. And so they can visit my website at marywingo.com. I'm always, you know, writing stuff that creates a stir and, kind of goes against the grain of stuff. But this is what we've found. This is well over 100 years of research, of very passionate researchers looking at this. I mean, this is what we have found. This is the final product. And because science is so obscure to so many people, and we scientists are a bit arrogant and a bit uppity and don't have a lot of empathy for regular people that are a lot of times paying for our jobs and paying for the research. We're not good at explaining stuff. I wanted to explain stuff. I wanted it to be clear to the average Joe. And so that is what I'm doing. That is what I'm doing. And I'm loaded down with a lot of interest, many, many interviews. And so, yeah, the interest in this is explosive.
Okay, great. Dr. Mary Wingo, thanks for being with us, Mary.
Thank you.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website. I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover all these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. This show will be available as a broadcast on iHeartRadio early next week. You can also find all the old episodes of the Common Sense Spirituality Show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction. And it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You're a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.